Greetings from BBS Radio, where truth and news still exist in that original form. Now, you're tuned in to The Spiritual Politician, the show that shows you where politics, government, and all that nasty selfishness went wrong, and how you can take action to make it right. I'm Melinda Pillsbury Foster, your host for this hour of personal revival, aimed at making each of us more responsible, more cooperative, and more aware of the spiritual bonds that connect us, no matter what we find to squabble over in the interim. Now, you can call us toll-free from the U.S. to 877-876-5227. You can call from Canada to 888-810-8322. Or you can call direct to 530-876-3222. This show is carried online, and you may also be able to get it on the air in your local area. To find out if an old-fashioned on-the-air station in your area carries this show, you just contact us at bbsradio.com. The website for the show can be found on the BBS Radio site and at spiritualpolitician.blogspot.com. All shows become available as soon as it is humanly or even extra humanly possible on the station archives. For information and links from this show, go to Off the Grids to Freedom or just email me. Lots is happening and lots needs to happen to make that thing called freedom real for all of us. And my blog site is titled How the Neocon Stole Freedom and is conveniently located at howtheneoconstolefreedom.blogspot.com. This week, the story up just a few hours ago is titled Operation Vigilant Shield. That's some name. Makes you think of a 30s space drama. It's my theory that they hired Newt Gingrich to write these names for them. You may remember that along with his other lack of talents, Newt is a third-rate science fiction writer who steals from everyone. At least Newt has dropped out of the presidential race. For that, we can be grateful. The article goes exactly to our show today, and more on that in a couple minutes. Right now, we're going to hear a few interesting news items from around the country. And the first one is a report on the Ron Paul Revolution from Drew Ivers in Iowa. It's really all about visibility, name recognition, and making it all happen. Volunteers are flowing into staff and the phone banks. They have rented another office space and 12 more lines, 24 total with 10 more coming. 15 volunteers this weekend minimum will be manning those phones. This is in addition to home-based volunteers. And what are they going to be doing with all those people? They're going to be contacting several million people before Christmas. And the radio campaign is now starting up. You know why Iowa matters in a presidential primary race. I don't need to tell you that. Dr. Paul's been asked to speak on the Jan Michelson show in Des Moines. Now, that is a conservative radio program station and program, and it has a huge following in the state. And they're finding by the phone calls that people are making that they didn't know who he was, but they're very excited to learn that he really is out there and exists. So a substantial headway is being made into that little thing we have to call name recognition. Ron will be there in 2 weeks from tomorrow for one whole day, and they will be keeping him busy. At 10 a.m. in the morning, there'll be an open forum for pastors relating to the caucus. There'll be a lunch break, major fundraiser until 3, and then a rally. At 5, they'll have him at the GOP fundraising event in downtown Des Moines. It's going to be exciting, and it's exciting also to see how somebody who everybody thought was going to be a marginal candidate, but who speaks for all of us, can get out there and change the way America views the world. And also, and this from Lou Rockwell's site, the establishment's nightmare comes true. And this was posted by Lou October 11th at 10:58 a.m. 2,000 students gathered to hear Ron Paul at a major university campus to cheer his anti-war eloquence. When he begins to discuss the monetary issue, they start chanting spontaneously, gold, 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 then light Federal Reserve dollar bills on fire, holding up them up like candles in the night, a bonfire of Benarac's vanities. National Review recently poo-pooed Ron's views and said that there was no necessary connection between inflation and war. Here is the only question. Does the state inflate to make war, or does it make war to inflate? In either case, or a mixed one, the link between killing and theft is ironclad, and the Ron Paul revolutionaries know it. No sound money, no peace, abolish the Fed. And that's the word from Lou Rockwell. And let us note that Rudy Giuliani was roundly booed while attending a game at Yankee Stadium in New York, and this was reported with astonishment and chagrin by the lamestream news. And now, just a few little thoughts for the week ahead. Jane Stilwell is back in Iraq. Read her column on the Iconoclast pages. The granny blogger is on her second tour of duty for liberty, enlightenment, and truth there. And this is the beginning of her latest column, Final Jeopardy. And the correct answer is, what is Al-Qaeda in Iraq? Everyone over here in Iraq talks a lot about Al-Qaeda, being confused as to exactly what Al-Qaeda actually is. I started researching that question. But where could I start? Wikipedia. And what they say, Al-Qaeda in Iraq is a term used by the media to describe a Sepharic terrorist group which is playing an active role in the Iraqi insurgency. Okay, but is this group connected with the real Al-Qaeda in Iraq, or just a blanket term for anyone wearing a ski mask over their head and carrying an AK-47? What definition would Alex Trebek give to his contestants on Jeopardy? I started asking around. Now, Jane goes on to find unexpected answers, as Jane always does. And you can read the rest of her column on the Iconoclast at LoneStarIcon.com. And now, another thought for our week ahead. Over the past several years, more and more of the American people are awakening to the fact that they are not safe, that they have been manipulated outrageously by those in government and those who government really exists to profit. If there were nothing we could do to enact change, it would be time to head for the wilderness or start a revolution. But there are, in fact, many things we can do that will reinvest control with the individual, allowing communities to come together to rebuild their own local economies and reestablish what has been lost. No one doubts today just how much that really is. America has come close to losing its true mission in the world. For an individual, that would be like losing your soul. America began as just that, a vision, a distant place on the horizon that was glimpsed, never seen. That vision brought the Puritans, Quakers, Scots-Irish, and many others to shores located months from their homelands. They came for a dream that, through time, became the dream of humanity across the globe. Freedom, control over your own life, security, knowing that you were valued and that when you're right, you would be heard and upheld. Later, Americans were drawn to the hope that America represents. Despite what you hear, America is not about unbridled prosperity or money or more of anything. It is about communities where people care about each other and build relationships that last. America is the birthplace of a spiritual revolution that allows growing numbers of us to see the connection that exists between every single soul, binding us, as Christ said, into one. Revolutions come with insights, understanding, and the courage to take a stand. Today we'll be talking with a man who has dedicated himself to providing insight and understanding for growing numbers every day. Our guest tonight is Captain Eric H. May, a specialist in intelligence who has been deep inside the cadre of power that we have come to know as the neocons. He has written professionally and was once considered for a job as a Bush speechwriter. Insiders see things that make them especially dangerous to the powers that be. The captain is a former NBC editorial writer. His political and military analyses have appeared in the Wall Street Journal, the Houston Chronicle, and Military Intelligence Magazine. He is a leader of the Portland Nuclear Inquest, a group of concerned citizens monitoring and discussing the top-off vigilant shield terror exercises. Captain May's awareness of what has been going on with now in the White House began in the mid-90s. That dangerous knowledge forced him to take evasive action to avoid being silenced. He and the people known as the Ghost Troop are working to make Americans aware of what has been happening. Please welcome Captain Eric May. Eric, are you there?
Linda, that was a gracious introduction. Thank you very much.
Well, it's my pleasure, and I'm so happy to have you here, especially now.
Well, if I can mention the part of my pedigree of which I'm most proud, it's that I'm your fellow writer at the Lone Star Iconoclast, of course, where you publish much of your work.
That's true. We have that in common, which is a really wonderful thing, too.
Well, I was quite proud that at the Iconoclast, our editor, W. Leon Smith, put the Portland exercises, the upcoming top-off and vigilant shield, on the front cover. And it's, the great irony is that the entire Portland media is playing deaf, dumb, and blind when it comes to these exercises. But the little Lone Star Iconoclast, the little paper that roared, is paying the kind of attention that you would think Portland would pay for itself.
Well, you would think so, and you would hope so, but the fact is sometimes it takes different degrees of experience and understanding for people to decide they're going to go and do just that. And most of the media in Portland is owned by the mainstream, or the lamestream, as I sometimes call
it.
Yeah,
I think that's very nice. I like lamestream. I'm fond of prestitution, but mainstream is good, too. I don't be surprised if I don't incorporate that. Wouldn't they say plagiarism is the sincerest form of flattery among writers?
I think it's true, and I think it's and thank you very much. I appreciate it.
By the way, you mentioned in your fine article on Vigilant Shield, which I just read this morning, that one of our other fellow correspondents, Major William Fox, we're very fortunate to have him. He's a former Marine major, background in public affairs, experience in intelligence, and he is on the ground in Portland as our special correspondent to the top-off Vigilant Shield exercises, carrying credentials already approved to be up close.
Mm-hmm.
And he has already been making a great number of calls, and I don't want to tip his hand on what he'll be publishing, but he's doing the best thing that could possibly be done for the protection of Portland, which is he's doing real investigative journalism to find out just what the heck is up.
Mm-hmm.
So he will be coming out along with, I think, you and me. I suspect all of us will be doing something that will contribute to people's knowledge of the Portland situation in the upcoming issue of the Lone Star Iconoclast.
Amen.
And I have to say, I encourage people to subscribe to the Iconoclast. It's probably read, it's read by about half its subscription is the local folks around Bush's Western White House in the heart of Texas in Crawford, but the other half go all the way from Capitol Hill to Al Jazeera.
That's for sure.
It's read worldwide, and it's read in the corridors of power as one of the very few truly independent media.
Mm-hmm. That's all true, and we certainly have Leon to thank for that.
Yes.
Because he has been determined to keep it going, no matter what they try to do to shut him down and shut him up. And I really approve of that in him, I have to say.
Oh, yes, he's a brave and talented editor. Of a tradition, you know, since Bush, who, by the way, is a Connecticut Yankee.
No, he is not. He's a Texan.
Say again?
He's not a Connecticut Yankee. They came in from, he has no Yankee blood whatsoever. They came in from Germany.
Oh, is that right?
Yep, they're just, and, you know, they were actually, on the Walker side of his family, their claim to fame is their activity in the Opium Wars.
Oh, okay.
They're really, really bad people.
Oh, the family's crooked up both sides. I mean, that's why Daddy Bush is called Poppy.
That's right.
Because he's supposed to have such an intimate connection with the opium trade.
Yep.
But since they came and claimed Texas, I haven't been bragging about my Texas roots so much because people hear plenty of that from Bush. But Leon Smith is in the best tradition of a brave frontier journalist on this frontier of the info war.
Yes, and one of the other things, of course, that Leon doesn't usually talk about with his background is that he's actually related to Erastus Smith, who is the one individual who relieved the Alamo. I don't know if you knew that.
I did not.
And is also the one that was responsible for the the motto, remember the Alamo.
Oh, is that right?
That's right.
Well, you see, a good public relations man has a good journalist grandchild or great grandchild.
That's right. And
well, I suppose that right now, all this lighthearted talk aside, it's these are dire, if not devilish, days that we're living in.
They certainly are. And what's happening now to America, I know that there's so many different issues, that the fact that there's no reporting in Portland itself is only one of those issues. But I know that you also, you've made yourself an expert on all of the things that are related to this, but let's start, since most people don't know, what is Operation Valiant Shield?
Vigilant Shield.
Vigilant Shield.
Well, Vigilant Shield is it's running first off in conjunction with Top Off. Those two have to be understood together.
Okay.
It's Top Off 4, which means the fourth iteration of the Top Off exercise. That means Top Off is a shortening of top officials. It's Top Off is a WMD exercise that has been held since, I think, 1998. This is the fourth iteration of it, and it's an attempt to work with senior level government, military, and police entities. Vigilant Shield is being run in conjunction with it. Vigilant Shield has been traditionally an exercise that has been based on defense from and reaction to WMD scenario, although this time around, all these things can be modified. Top Off, for instance, has gone from everything from a plague in Chicago, which I think was Vigilant Shield 02, a chemical mustard gas situation, which I think was Vigilant Shield 03.
Mm-hmm.
So the motif, the scenario changes. And in the same way, Vigilant Shield has changed, so that this time around, there's a lot of chatter, and we're trying to get more to the point with that with Major Fox's investigation. There's a lot of chatter that Vigilant Shield's primary concern is going to be practicing the implementation of NSPD 51,
mm-hmm.
The dictator directive, National Security Presidential Directive 51.
And that was passed just this last spring.
Right. Well, we have to be careful of the terminology. It wasn't passed. It was signed into effect by Bush. There was no discussion. It was not mandated by Congress. It is a directive from the executive branch. And it was May 9th, 2007, that came into force. And it actually began implementation per statute 90 days later,
mm-hmm.
which would have meant right about the beginning of August.
Mm-hmm.
So any exercise that comes up now that involves a catastrophic scenario, and the Top Off 4/Vigilant Shield 8 exercises that are going on now in Portland, Phoenix, and Guam, or
mm-hmm.
rather will be going on starting Monday, those exercises are inevitably going to deal with the concept of NSPD 51, which, to summarize for your listeners, NSPD 51 is it's the equivalent for Bush of what Article 48 of the Weimar Constitution was for Hitler.
Uh-huh.
It basically says that the omnipotent ruler, call him your Führer in Germany or call him the unitary executive in neocon talk,
mm-hmm.
that the unitary executive can take control of the nation in all federal, state, local, and tribal government, as well as in key industries, when he declares that an emergency exists.
Mm-hmm.
He gets to declare the catastrophe. It can be either a natural catastrophe like a hurricane, or it can be a catastrophe like a terror strike. So the dilemma for those of us who are savvy to the way these things work is that any president who wants to end all the troublesome Democratic harping and complaining about how bad things have gotten has merely to cause a catastrophe and then proclaim himself dictator. And that's what NSPD 51 lets Bush do.
And, of course, that's one thing. It's one thing to have this little piece of paper that even if you put it on your own very special embossed stationery, but it's another thing to actually make that constitutionally viable. And that's, of course, always where the rubber hits the road. Now, it certainly has been pointed out that Portland has not had much reaction, but the fact is there is you know, there's a lot of precedent saying that this is completely illegal, he doesn't have a right to do it, and that they could simply be ordered out.
Well, actually, on the Portland reaction thing, I became interested in the Portland scenario after having worked parallel to many military exercises. First off, Melinda, as you mentioned, I was in military intelligence, but 5 years of my career with the military was spent in the 75th Division in Houston, Texas, where we practiced operational exercises all the way up to core level, which means that we specialized in running these massive drills.
Mm-hmm.
So I worked in these drills until the mid-90s, and since 9/11, I've been working parallel to these drills as a media analyst for now cyber media. You can't publish my stuff mainstream. So I became interested in Vigilant Shield and Top-Off way back in July of the summer. And the reason was that at that point, the Oregon and Portland communities were raising so much cane about NSPD 51 that one of Oregon's congressmen, I think District 4, Oregon Democratic Congressman Peter DeFazio, in the early summer after NSPD 51 was passed, the Portlanders and Oregonians started saying, we have exercises coming up in our state that might give a cause for implementing this dictatorship on Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
For the first month, DeFazio did nothing but say, go back to sleep, trust the government. I'm not worried about it. Don't you worry about it. And the people wouldn't have that. So they pressed DeFazio so much that by late July, just before the congressional break this summer, DeFazio requested access from the White House to NSPD 51,
mm-hmm.
not simply the version that you'll pick up if you go look up Wikipedia, but the classified version. There are classified annexes to NSPD 51,
mm-hmm.
and that's the guts of the plan, you know. But DeFazio has all the appropriate clearances. He's a member of the Homeland Security Committee, House of Representatives Homeland Security Committee. So there is nothing at all irregular in him requesting access to the classified annexes of the directive.
Well, he is a congressman.
For the first time in his 20-year career, he was refused. He was refused access. So he went back, and now we're getting up to almost August 1st, he went back to Bernie Thompson, the chairman of the House Homeland Security Committee, and Bernie Thompson and one other undersecretary and, or not undersecretary, chairman, and DeFazio wrote a joint request for access officially as the Homeland Security Committee in the House to NSPD 51.
Okay.
And they were again refused access. Which is when DeFazio made a very famous quote passed around widely in the Internet, which is, maybe the people who think there's a conspiracy out there are right.
That is a great quote.
He went to the House floor and gave a speech just before the recess in August. And one can find it. If you look for DeFazio on YouTube,
mm-hmm.
you'll find that it's posted on YouTube about the so-called continuity of government, which is what NSPD 51 is labeled as, the Continuity of Government Directive. He made a one-and-a-half-minute speech in which he said, there's nothing here to trust. You know, they won't tell us. They're keeping us in the dark. So what we can say about NSPD 51 to date is that it was signed into effect by a fiat of the executive branch. It has not been disclosed to the appropriate oversight committees of the House of Representatives.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I take it the Senate ain't even asking. You know, that's Lieberman's bunch, the Homeland Security Committee in the Senate. They're not even going to bother Bush. But it has been kept from the House, and all that's being told the House Committee is what's told us all, which is, we're in charge, we're taking care of you, protecting you is our top priority, and shut up.
Well, that's very interesting, and of course that goes to a lot of other different related issues, including most particularly the fact that if you take a look at, again, the genetic background of Bush Boy, his grandfather tried to do something very similar in 1933.
With Smedley Butler.
That's right, with Smedley Butler.
They tried to have a coup d'etat.
That's right.
Coup d'etat by my grandpapa, says George.
Yes, and he wants to be the one that actually carries it out for the family, right?
Well, that's true, and the best business ever invented was war, and Bush and all the Bush family know that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, granddaddy was involved in war industry. You know, when this is looked at as a kind of sins of the fathers type thing, and when you think of the Bush family as just a war crimes operation, it all becomes clear. But, of course, that's what, the lamestream media is built to keep us from finding out. We're not supposed to worry our pretty little heads about the fact that Bush's granddaddy tried a coup d'etat, sold weaponry to both sides of World War II, was a member of a secret society, the Skull and Bones, which Bush's daddy and he are members,
uh-huh.
which is dedicated to war and death.
Mm-hmm.
It's a war cult.
Well, and it's very a profitable war cult, but otherwise it wouldn't interest them so much.
Right, dedicated to war and death as a venue of profit.
That's right.
Right, that's right.
Yes, if they had to pay their own shell out their own money for this, it wouldn't be happening.
Oh, it wouldn't be fun to kill people if it cost money.
No, of course not.
But at the end, you know what? One has to understand that the media apparatus is simply the propaganda arm of that big racket that now is in control of our country.
That's right.
It's that when people say conspiracy theorists, man, anybody who doesn't think this war was a conspiracy needs to stick to the funny papers.
No, that's for sure.
The funny farm.
And you take a look at exactly what has happened here and how it has been enabled and how much money they're making out of this. That's another thing that people really need to consider, because when you take a look at how much money this is costing Americans, when there isn't money to fund the public schools in Portland, Oregon, it should give any American pause.
One has to understand that at the top of this cabal. And by the way, that word was used by no less an insider than Colonel Larry Wilkerson, Colin Powell's chief of staff as Secretary of State, who was the first one to come out and publicly say this Bush-Cheney cabal, this neocon cabal. One has to understand that the people at the head of this cabal intend to destroy the American Republic.
Mm-hmm.
And damn the consequences. They know that regardless of the consequences to our liberties, the ultimate consequence will be an enrichment of themselves and their cronies. That's what this is being done for. And if I can say one thing that's important, it's that if one studies just an encyclopedia article on the course of the Third Reich, on how Hitler came to power on a false flag attack, he burned down his Reichstag, and
mm-hmm.
quickly set up an enabling act and a Gestapo and Dachau political prison camp. And one understands exactly why it is that Bush came to power with a false flag in the World Trade Center and quickly established the Patriot Act and the Homeland Security Agency and Gitmo.
Mm-hmm.
We're following a blueprint, and it's not a coincidental thing at all. That's one of the reasons that the media, one of the great taboos in the mainstream, lamestream media, is that they will not discuss any parallelism to the Third Reich. Whereas if you go to any protest in the world that's being carried out against American hegemony, the first thing you're going to see is an American flag with a swastika on it,
mm-hmm.
or Bush painted up as Hitler, because it's painfully obvious to everybody else in the world that that's the blueprint we have followed.
He doesn't look any better with a mustache.
That's true. So the next week, the 15th through the 19th, will be this joint exercise, and I've, in my latest, my own writing on it, I have published an article, as you know, in the Iconoclast and other
great
places.
Great article, by the way.
Thank you. It's called Nuclear Dictatorship. And anyone who wants to look that up on a Google or Yahoo or any search engine will find many copies of it worldwide. But nuclear dictatorship is in honor of the two exercises. Pop-off is basically about nuking Portland, Phoenix, and Guam. And dictatorship is what Vigilant Shield is about.
Mm-hmm.
It's a double exercise practicing the two components of nuking us and dictatorship.
Now, let's get into something that I think people need to understand, and a lot of people still don't, because there's a parallel here. And the parallel is that here we're supposedly have these planned drills when there's one thing that these planned drills have been very consistently associated with that, and that's actual terrorist incidents.
Yeah, let's explain that. That's because the planned drills, what I've come to think over time is that every one of these exercises, well, we have to understand, until 9/11, which coincidentally happened on the exact date that would make us think, emergency, emergency, call the government, 911.
Right.
Ever since the PSYOP of the false flag attack on 9/11, the Bush administration has militarized North America with something called Northern Command, NORTHCOM. Previous to that, there was no military command in charge of the United States. The United States wouldn't have tolerated it. The idea that you had a military command, that's old Soviet Union stuff. You didn't have that.
Mm-hmm.
And it also set up the Homeland Security Agency, which we affectionately call HOMSECA, kind of the Gestapo of our time.
Yes.
These two entities have been at the forefront of setting up catastrophic exercises across the nation. And these catastrophic exercises simulate events that, if they were to occur, would in all likelihood end our democracy.
Mm-hmm.
That view was put out by Tommy Franks, by the way, the former commander of forces in the Iraq invasion, who came back and said if there were another 9/11, especially a nuclear 9/11, we'd have martial law, an end of constitutional government, and everybody would just knuckle under, do what they were told to stay safe.
Uh-huh.
So one comes to a fundamental question. Are these exercises being set up to prevent and react to these type of catastrophic events? Or rather, are these exercises simply the best possible way to set up these catastrophic events?
Yes, because that's exactly what's happened before.
Well, exactly. And the two cases I think that people are most discussing and should are 9/11 itself, when we find out, for instance, everyone knows that Cheney was in the bunker. But what's come out in the process, even of corrupt processes like the 9/11 Commission investigations, was that Cheney was in the bunker before 9/11 started happening.
Mm-hmm.
Because 9/11, at that point in time, was not the day, in the early morning, before the first plane hit. 9/11 was not a historic day because terrorist attacks happened. But 9/11 was already a historic day because of the extent of military exercises that were overlapping.
Mm-hmm.
Various investigators name as many as 17 different exercises. And a whole handful of them, by the way, had the title of, Vigilant Guardian? You know, Vigilant was in there.
Mm-hmm.
Cheney was running all kinds of concurrent exercises with powers that had just been signed over to him by George Bush Jr., who was hanging out in Crawford up till the day of 9/11, and is signing over power over military forces to the vice president. So Bush signs over power to Cheney to run and control the military, and Cheney is running and controlling the military, which is simulating a bunch of different scenarios, including a Russian attack in Alaska, which pulled America's air cover away to go chase a wild goose up in Alaska. And that was Vigilant Guardian, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
There were concurrent exercises going on where terrorist hijackings of aircraft and even terrorist hijackings of aircraft that were to be exploded against skyscrapers and targets were entertained.
Mm-hmm.
So the entire 9/11 scenario was occurring in a game.
It has to give you pause for thought because, the kindest construction that would be put on that is that there had been a leak and somehow Osama bin Laden knew that, but there's no reason to think that that's the case.
Right. We have to really strain at gnats to make it plausible. For instance, one could also say, well, the government knew they were going to be doing that, so it was setting up its defenses. But
yes,
that didn't work either because they pulled their defenses away to let it happen.
Yes.
So the in and the out of it is that when the public understands that what happened on 9/11 at 9 a.m. was already being planned a month earlier and was actually occurring in the exercise scenario before it happened in reality on the morning of 9/11, then the public begins to understand. We were practicing, in the military they say, you practice what you're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in this case, the military really was practicing what it was going to do. 99% of the people in that exercise didn't have any clue except that they were obeying orders.
Right.
1% committed high treason by taking the exercises live.
And that's exactly what it was, of course. It was treason.
Yes. Of a sort that the most outrageous treason since Nero burned Rome.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, analogous to it. Which is why, in the wake of 9/11, we had this massive imposition of a police state at home and a fascist foreign policy abroad. And, you know, fascist foreign policy and police state always linked together. But we never had any investigation into the conduct of a zillion different officers who were in the chain of command on 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
There was never one single reprimand written. There was never one sworn statement given.
It was a question that they acted as if they had actually done a good job at defending America, and that's bizarre to even imagine. How could that have happened? Why weren't they shot down?
Somebody should have been the Judas goat on this one,
mm-hmm.
and no one was. And in fact, some of the key people, like Myers, was appointed chief of staff. He was bumped up. You know, what happened was the crooks took over, hijacked an exercise, took it live, and told everybody afterwards, don't worry about what happened. You know, what happened has taken us to a new echelon of reality. You know, follow the leader. And then they appointed all the people who were crooks leaders.
Yes.
So one has to understand that every military exercise, to put it in layman's terms, I'm the sheriff out at your house, Melissa and Melinda, in your part of town.
Yes.
And I say, we're going to run an exercise where we're going to come over and stake out your house just in case somebody comes in and shoots you. And then we come over and stake out your house, and at that moment someone does come in and shoot you.
Well, that would make one have pause for thought if one was alive.
You're right. The only thing that happened was the whole thing we did was altered by what was called someone taking it live. Someone
uh-huh.
put a live bullet in, and instead of practicing an assassination, we have one.
Yes.
And nobody ever knows that assassination was always the intention.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this carries us to take another parallel. London, the 7/7 London train bombings, were even more outrageous because there were 1,000 London policemen, national agents, and, importantly, private contractors involved in rehearsing terrorist attacks against the London subway system.
Mm-hmm.
They were rehearsing exactly the train numbers that got hit and exactly the places where they got hit at exactly the times where they got hit.
Wow, what a coincidence.
Yeah, triple coincidence. So, you know, you have the trifecta. Now, the only reason this can be carried out is that the media does all it can to poo-poo any kind of analysis, any kind of speculation about these exercises, any kind of awareness of these exercises, or when they go live, any kind of analysis of these exercises.
Mm-hmm. Which actually brings up an issue that I think we should raise at this point, and that is when you can see the particular people who've had it, you know, in their sort of charge, in their command to make sure that certain things were ignored, and they go ahead and do that. I think arguably you could say that they are members of an invading force or are guilty of treason themselves. And certainly afterwards, there would have to be what we call repercussions.
Yeah, I think when this is all over, since every once in a while people like it if I say something dire.
Good.
And, I don't mind at this point. Not only is there is widespread treason. This could not have been, it could not have occurred. Our condition of things. We have had a 9/11 attack. It has been covered up consistently by the media. My former background was as a Russian-speaking analyst in military intelligence, and I used to watch Soviet broadcasts, listen to their recordings, read their newspapers, and the art became understanding how it was that the party apparatchiks were telling official lies. And they
mm-hmm.
couldn't have done it if they hadn't known they were telling official lies.
Yeah.
When I watch TV, I don't see any difference between Fox, MSNBC, NBC, CBS, ABC. Look, it's all propaganda. It's all state propaganda. And there's one thing I understand, which is that just about everyone sitting at the desks all the news bunnies and all the talking heads.
Yes.
They're in on the gag, folks. They're not just out of the loop and don't know what's up and we're smarter than they are. The reason those psychopaths are sitting there is because they're the best liars in media.
Mm-hmm.
That's their job. Their job isn't to be square with us. Their job is to pretend to be square with us and make us think, oh, well, I'm going to watch Lou Dobbs because he stands up for my issue here. Oh, I'm going to watch Oberman because he stands up for my issue there. Or, oh, I hate O'Reilly because he doesn't tell the truth. The simple fact of the matter is they're all poisonous. And they're all complicit in covering this up. And when you come to particular media in particular areas, for instance, Portland, you wind up with, you know, you wind up with specific editors being told to take positions to put down stories.
Mm-hmm.
You wind up with specific journalists who are writing poison pen articles to make it seem that anyone who has rational concerns about, you know, about practicing, at the very least, these people are practicing a police state and dictatorship. And at the worst, they may take these exercises live and establish a nationwide dictatorship.
Yes.
But anybody who puts out that point, which God knows Washington or Jefferson or Adams would have been careful to put that point out, you know, they lived under a King George, too. That wouldn't be shocking thought to them.
Not at all.
Now, the people who are supposedly guardians of our First Amendment strenuously avoid saying that, and they dedicate their efforts, and I'm speaking specifically of the Portland media now. Everything that I saw broadcast, everything that I read written about the last exercise, which is called Noble Resolve, practicing a nuke in Portland as well, everything I saw in the mainstream media was intended to make people who are saying what we're saying now seem like they were in cloud cuckoo land.
Mm-hmm.
Like we'd lost our tempers and we'd lost our minds.
Yes.
And what we're doing is we're having, you know, clearly what you and I are having now is a rational discussion and involving a degree of expertise that, you know, in my case I'm bringing in. You know, I'm not an outsider peeking in. I'm an insider talking out.
Well, that's true. And, you know, I also have seen these things going on, you know, from a position sort of inside, you know, because I saw them talked about by people who, you know, like, you know, John Fun in his particular case, he's the one that orchestrated Project Arkansas. One of the things that I noticed in that was an amazing degree of lack of conscience about what he had done, because he bragged about the fact that he had been the one that forced Vince Foster to suicide.
Well, these neocons are sociopaths.
They are.
And if you want to put it in another term, for those who took their sophomore survey course in philosophy, they have a Nietzschean delight in being Antichrist.
Mm-hmm.
That to them, you know, that's to do a great sin is a great powerful thing. And one's great in proportion to the greatness of crime one can commit.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the mindset that pervades these people. You know, there are those little stories, of course, that never get repeated. You never hear mainstream media talk about how Bush joked the first time he came to Congress after he'd been appointed president by the Supreme Court decision. He joked about how dictatorship would be easier.
That's right. That's exactly what he said.
That's the kind of remark that got Caesar cut down.
It is.
A healthy republic would impeach the guy before he took office.
I would say so.
And in the same way, people don't recall, but we do here in Texas, that when we had the first female execution in over a century, it was a girl named Carla Faye Tucker, and I don't speak in praise of Carla Faye, but Bush, you know, the born-again Christian that they say that he is, of course he's not, he's a little devil, but Bush was laughing out loud and mocking her at the time she was strapped down to the gurney. In other words, Bush got off on the idea that somebody was putting the woman down for good on his watch, and that he was the one who could have stopped it, but didn't. Not because he was upholding justice, but because he liked the idea that she was strapped down and killed.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when one thinks of Carla Faye Tucker being strapped down and executed by Bush's administration as governor of Texas, that's the model one needs to keep in mind when they do these exercises.
Yeah.
There are going to be 15,000 to 20,000 mobilized federal agents and police and state and local police, and every agency, a whole alphabet soup of DOE for Department of Energy, FBI for Federal Bureau of Investigation, you know, ForceCom, NorthCom, you know, StratCom, you name it, com. There are going to be 15 to 20,000 of these folks mobilized in the largest exercise ever.
Yes.
And they're simulating the destruction of one of three American targets by a dirty nuke. That's kind of like saying Bush has 20,000 helpers who are strapping down three American cities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the same thing.
Absolutely.
You know, he isn't going to go lead a coup d'etat from the street.
He doesn't have the balls.
Right, no, he does not in any way have the balls. No, for God's sake, he was a cheerleader. I mean, but that defines Bush's character. When you understand what we've talked about getting into this at the beginning, this is all called the psychology of the enemy commander. Once you realize that Bush is the front man and the ostensible commander for this malice, you have to understand his family background, which is where we started.
Mm-hmm.
You have to understand his psychological makeup. He's a sadist. Please,
yes.
Sadist. You have to understand that...
One of the things that people should... I don't know how many people who are listening are aware of Leola McConnell, who wrote a book. She was a professional dominatrix. She was employed by Victor Ashe and provided services to Bush personally. And she writes about her encounter with them while Ashe was running for U.S. Senate in Tennessee, in I think it was the early in the 1980s. And she ended up, because she's a dominatrix, she dominates, and she doesn't put up with anything else, evidently. And she had to throw Bush across the room, and she did throw him across the room, and he whined.
None of that is shocking or even incredible to me. There was a gal down in Houston, black woman, Margie Schoedinger,
mm-hmm.
who, after Bush was elected, she decided to do a, who was the gal in Clinton's past? Sudan.
There was Susan something or other, I don't remember.
Yeah, there were women coming out of the woodworks on Clinton, and one of them got a big settlement, nearly $1 million. Well, Margie Schoedinger came out of the woodwork and talked about how Bush had kept her on the side when she was a minor and whatnot in Houston. And the only story in the world that appeared on that was Pravda. No American media would touch it.
Mm-hmm.
This was about 2001. And shortly afterwards, Schoedinger filed suit, and in the suit alleged that she'd been brutalized by the local FBI, intimidated by the local cops and whatnot. And Pravda ran the story and said, you know, in the United States, this is not officially recognized as a story of interest, which is very peculiar, but we'll have to see what happens to this young woman. That will say a lot about the validity of her claims. And don't you know, that woman wound up being dead a year later.
Mm-hmm.
And the only newspaper on earth that would cover it again was Pravda.
Yes.
So it's a great irony when Bush is such a protected media figure that the only place an American citizen can read the truth about the goings-on of our government is in a Russian newspaper.
That is appalling.
Well, especially for an old cold warrior like me.
Yes.
But we have to understand that this administration, these eight people, are capable of anything. Another little philosophical tag that helps us understand them is that they're devotees, the more intellectual ones, are devotees of Leo Strauss.
Yes.
And the Straussians, at the most intellectual level, they simply believe that the many, oi poloi in Greek, the many must be led, and they must be led by noble wise. And they derive that idea from Plato's Republic and some other key philosophical, political philosophy works.
But they always come up for it with rationalizations for what they want to do.
Right, what it also comes down to at the user level is that they all help tell themselves, they had to be cruel to be kind. They
uh-huh.
had to kill 3,000 Americans to get us into a Middle Eastern war under favorable circumstances with full public support. Otherwise,
yes.
we might have lost more. What the heck? 3,000. It was a good start to a war. You know, there was a Nietzschean statement, which is, and again, Nietzsche delights in being malicious. And Nietzsche says, you have heard that a good cause justifies any war. The but I tell you that a good war justifies any cause. And that's what they go with. So right now we have to understand the war machine, not just of Bush and the Republican Party, because there's only one party in America and the Democrats belong to it. It's
that's
the war
right.
party.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Democrats have given Bush everything the Republicans gave him since they took over. It's just that they complain and say they didn't want to.
Yes.
They don't resist.
Oh.
The war party right now is running out of gas. The army is broken down like an old Chevy. I mean, the Marines can't roll out. We need $50 billion worth of refitting just to recover equipment that's been damaged. You know, desert warfare is hell on equipment.
Oh, boy.
The soldiers are shot up. We're not being told the true number of killed in action, folks. That's a whole different interview.
Amen.
They're sucking up radioactive dust. We've killed 1 million Iraqis, according to objective independent reports out of the UK. This thing has become a complete abomination, a genocide and a war crime in progress. And the only thing that's going to keep it going is another 9-1-1.
Yes, and they know that, but you know what? It's not going to work. Now, let's talk for a moment about what Americans ought to be doing now, because I know that Leon told me that he had talked to his congressman and asked him to start asking questions, and that congressman was surprised to be asked to do such a thing, but he's going to start doing that. So what kinds of questions should people be asking so that their congressmen know that they're also not going to be on the protected list because they don't have a use for them after they don't have us to control.
Right. Yeah, this is the Quisling Congress.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, first off, it all needs to be framed around two concepts. There are two bookends to everything I will recommend to anybody. One is awareness and diffusion of the 911 truth movement. Become aware of 911 truth. Don't get lost in the minutiae of were there or were there not photographic, holographic projections. Don't get lost in minutiae. Just understand that 911 was an inside job. And then that's the beginning bookend. The final bookend is what we code in my side as 911-2B, number 2, letter B. That means the 911 they promise us. They keep saying it's not a matter of if it's going to be, but when it's going to be. But
mm-hmm.
we simply say the next 9/11 is 911-2B, the 9/11-2B event. In
yes.
between those two things are all the levels of political and military machinations to take us from 911 to 911-2B. And I would ask, if I were going to my congressman, I'd first ask why there is not, you know, serious investigation of the 911 committee, the findings, a serious investigation. And you can quote people like Kucinich and Ron Paul who are calling for an investigation.
Amen.
You can quote Kearns and Keene,
yes.
co-chairs of the 911 Commission themselves, who noted that the military was telling them different flavors of lies about what they were doing on 911.
Mm-hmm.
So ask about WTC-7, World Trade Center 7, the third building that went down on September 11th, which was clearly a controlled demolition because Larry Silverstein, the Zionist who owned the thing, admitted on PBS it was a controlled demolition. He said on camera, he gave orders to pull it, and we watched it come down. Those are the terms of a controlled demolition. In the present tense, as far as more particular and immediate events, ask why these exercises are not being fully disclosed to the public.
Amen.
These are not classified exercises. These are, why is there not a citizens' watch group? Why is it they don't take people like you and me and just say, shucks, you know, pay for your own gas, you come around and watch it go down.
Right.
We'd love to have you.
That's never going to happen. Well, you know, unfortunately, we've gotten to the point in the time when we're going to have to close. But I know people have lots more questions, and a lot of people are going to want to be in touch with you. Could you please give them your contact information?
Yes. You can reach me at my email address, which is CaptainMay@Prodigy.net. All small case, CaptainMay@Prodigy.net. And we'll go from there. You can join the inquiry we're doing on the Portland nuclear situation by Googling any search engine, Portland Nuclear Inquest. That's a user group we have with around 100 people, and it's probably the best exchange of intelligence on these exercises available anywhere.
I'm sure that that's the case. Well, thank you so much for being with us today. God bless, and we'll look forward to having you here again soon and to finding out what happens this week.
It's a great honor, y'all. Thank you.
Thanks. Good night. And that's our show for today, Friday, October 12, 2007. All of us need the truth. Without that, we can't prepare to meet what's coming, survive, and build a new and better world for our children. The first step on the path to truth is a willingness to hear it, even when the truth brings pain. On this show, as we do with all our shows, we end by reading the section of the Declaration of Independence that is and will always be America's mission statement. This remains where we want to go today. It is up to each of us to ensure we reach the destination. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it, and to institute new government laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Prudence indeed will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes, and accordingly all experience has shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations pursuing invariably the same object evidences a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. This is Melinda Pillsbury Foster coming to you from BBS Radio. God bless the journey that eventually brings us to freedom. And may God be with you every step of the way. Good night.